The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
They were not in. Well, they were probably in. Well, they were in L.A. in the beginning of the 2000s, right?
No, they were not. No, that was the 90s, right? Right. You're off on your... Look, you're getting old now. You can't even remember what old. Decades are.
I was like,
right.
I was young. And you're like, yeah, you were young in the 90s. Okay, oops,
yeah, you were.
Oh, yeah, that's right. My buddy's back. It's about damn time he showed up. That's right. We got him off the baseball bandwagon. We got him back into the important things in the world. Yeah. Chris Sims unbuttoned. Ahmed Fareed's here. He's been working all summer. He's been working all weekend. And now I drug his ass in here on a Monday to do the podcast. I missed you, man.
I missed you, too,
Good to
Chris.
See you, man.
I listened to you and Connor.
Good.
Last couple pods.
Thank you.
Sounded great.
Good. I took a few shots at you.
I know. I heard that.
You know, Connor's cool. Connor's very cool. He's cooler than me, too.
100%.
I'll admit that. You know, he's got a cool... I mean, he wore a shirt on here last Monday, and I mean, Morgan was like, oh, that's such a cool shirt, Connor. Oh, my gosh. It's the coolest shirt I've ever seen. And it just made me feel like chopped liver, which then I tried to make you feel like chopped liver.
Well, yeah, it's not hard. He looks cool. He sounds cool.
Yeah.
He knows a ton about football.
Right.
No, it was great listening to you guys. And it was kind of good for me because it was like a refresher on what's going on
this
past month.
Right.
You know, because you're right. I've been in baseball world, been a little horse racing world. And then I was at Big Ten Media Days. We got the Big Ten football package coming
up. Seriously, grinding.
Grinding.
Like no other for the peacock out there.
I know.
Yeah. I know. It's we're slowly getting started here.
Yes.
Little by little. You know, the news is ramping up. We're going to have more and more tangible things to talk about. You know, right now we're kind of making up things. There's a few storylines, just a few stories here and there.
We're not making up things.
No.
The homies are making up things with their questions to us.
Well, that's
we're
right.
Just answering
questions. We're trying to find stuff to talk about and fill for an hour. I think we got a good podcast today. But, yeah, like before we even get into the football and the nuts and bolts and things we're going to talk about, like what else is going on? Anything else interesting in life? Family's good?
Family's good. Yeah. Summer vacation. We got a new puppy. I don't know if I told you that.
You did not tell me that.
We got a golden retriever.
A golden retriever.
Yeah.
Okay.
White fur.
Oh.
So it's kind of like an
cute
English
as hell.
Cream.
I mean, oh, that's awesome.
Very cute.
A puppy, like, I mean, how old right now?
She's like 14 weeks, I think,
right now.
Okay.
All right.
And she's already getting bigger. And they say by 1 year, she's already almost full grown. She'll be like 40 or 50 pounds.
I would think so. Dogs, it seems about a year, it's all done. Puppy
yes.
love's done.
A lot of little biting.
I give you – all right. They nibble a little. They're
little
a dog.
Nibblers.
You know, you got to give them a little flick on the nose.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
Roll up a magazine.
Okay.
That was another thing I used to do. Just roll up a magazine and just like a little like boom on the nose, right? Every time he tries to bite something, not to like you're trying to hurt him.
Right.
Just let him know like, no, you don't do that.
Not like abusive. But
right.
Just like a little tap.
A little tap. That's how that's the language for the animals,
that's
right?
True.
Like, oh, don't do that.
Or the neck, you know, a little
pull
by the neck.
Or you pull the neck, you could do that, right? I give you credit though. You got a dog. One of the things now is like everybody is I'm going to say out of 10 people I talk to, if 10 people get a new dog, 9 of those dogs are a Labradoodle.
Oh.
A Labradoodle.
Yeah.
I got a Labradoodle. I got a Labradoodle. I got a Labradoodle. Why'd you get a Labradoodle? Oh, because it doesn't shed. It's the most popular fucking dog and animal in the world just because it doesn't shed anymore.
Yes.
So I give you credit because you're going to have a hairy house now.
I did look at dogs that don't shed. I did ask my wife. I was like, other ones that don't shed? But I was outnumbered. You know, I was like, I'm not a huge like animal person.
Yeah.
But I'll pet on a dog and love on a dog. And so it was my son, it was my daughter, and it was my wife.
Yeah,
all three. It was three against one. Not that I was going to vote against it, but... I was like, you know, you realize that, like, this is the summer where the kids are getting older. They're 9 and 7. Like, they're self-sufficient. Like, we can go do stuff now. We can go live our lives. Not anymore. No, puppy
well,
right in the mix.
Well, it's all right. That puppy will be there. At one point, he's going to be, you're going to feel good the puppy's going to be home in a year from now, though, too. You might be like, hey, we leave the kids home for an hour. It'd be good
true.
To have the 70-pound golden retriever yeah. walking around a little bit.
Yeah.
And they're getting to the age, too, your kids, where... You know, you could boss them around and be like, hey, here's your duty. Take your dog out, you
yeah.
know, walk him out there.
And
he's
if they
go
don't,
to the bathroom.
If they don't, hit him on the nose.
Exactly.
Well, no,
exactly right. Get the whip out because whips for humans, newspapers,
yeah.
magazines for dogs.
Yeah.
I'm joking.
Don't do that. Don't do that out there. Chris does not condone any of that stuff. The newspaper, yes, but no, the whip. No, so it's been busy, but it's been fun, but... I'm happy to be back here laughing with you and talking some NFL football.
You know it.
So this is hard for me because it's like I've been connected,
yeah.
but not as connected.
No, don't worry. We'll get
and
you
so
up to speed here,
I don't know
Slugger.
Exactly what you guys have talked about, what you haven't talked about, but we got a lot in the rundown here. Pete does know, and
yeah.
so he set up our rundown here. And so we got a lot of things. We're going to get into your Ask Me Anything questions, and there's a lot of different questions on different teams and players, as you always do such a great job with. We want to talk about a couple things here. We're going to talk about the running back situation.
Yeah.
You did talk about that a little bit with some ideas on how to make it better for the running backs,
sure.
which I liked all those with you and
thanks
Connor.
A lot. Yeah, listen, it's still one of the biggest subjects going on in the NFL right now. And yeah, we'll hit on that, and particularly to Jonathan Taylor and some of the shenanigans that are going on there in Indianapolis.
And kind of how the running back position stacks up against these other positions,
yeah,
too. And
right.
like
I like this.
The hierarchy of positions.
Sure.
If you were a GM, what is the most important? What's the least important position?
Right.
So we'll talk about that, but let's start with some new head coach talk because we got how many new head coaches? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. New head coaches, is
yeah,
that it right
that's
there?
Right.
Broncos, Colts, Texans, Panthers, Cardinals, Sean Payton, Shane Steichen, D'Amico Ryans, Frank Reich, and Jonathan Gannon. So we'll talk about what a successful season looks like for all those guys.
Yeah, cool.
But let's start with Sean Payton.
All right, yeah.
Because he's been in the news a lot. He was in the news a lot around draft time. I remember that. Actually, wasn't in the news as much as I thought he might be
yeah.
at that time.
Well, you're right. You're right.
right?
Yeah, I mean he's had some moments this offseason for sure. Right, I think we're yeah, some have made the spotlight, some have not. A little bit there. Sean Payton, though, like yeah, it's an odd situation, and what we're talking about, and kind of the spectacle that he made last week with some of his comments and the state of the Denver organization, and of course specifically to Nathaniel Hackett, the new OC of the New York Jets and the ex head coach of the Denver Broncos.
You've probably heard the comments, Sean Payton saying basically it's the worst head coaching job that he has ever seen, and they won the offseason, and oh, look at us for the Jets, and rarely a team that does that is any good. So he was harsh. He said he was wearing his Fox hat.
Yeah.
He forgot to take off his Fox hat
yeah.
and put on his his Broncos hat.
Right. I mean, it's amazing, I think, a little bit, or shocking. Yeah, was the word I use, reckless. Obviously got caught rambling,
mm-hmm.
right? I know he said it's a mistake. For as smart as a human being as he is, you'd think maybe after the second or third crazy thing that came out of your mouth, you start to go, wait, hold on. Maybe I've said a lot here. He obviously got very comfortable. Was there a message or something he was trying to do? I know everybody in the media, right, who is trying to stick up for him. And you're allowed to stick up for him and also go, that's messed up, okay? That's what I did not like about some people in the media. They kind of like glossed over, he's doing this for a reason and tactical. There's no reason for shitting on another human. Mm-hmm. I mean, sorry. There's not. There's not.
And trying to take the spotlight off Russ and put it on himself,
right,
and he's
right.
got the target now. And
well,
like, that's where
to me, when you get into it and how it's being viewed, right, that's what it looks like from the outside looking in. It looks like a guy that was, he's one going, hey, I took over a disaster, right? I took over a disaster. So he's lowering everybody's expectations right off the bat there. So that's what it looks like. He's doing that, then be able to maybe pump out his chest when things go well and be like, look what I saved, this horrible thing here. Is he trying to prop up his players to a degree? I saw some of that too. Sure. I'm sure he's sick about talking about last year. His players are sick of hearing about last year. He's probably sick of hearing questions about Russell Wilson all the time. He's probably seen enough. I know he's seen enough this offseason to go, no, Russell Wilson's still good, right? But, yeah, I think it's just the way he delivered it. First off, broke the no-no of, like, just –
stay out of another man's business, right? That's just man's world, let alone football like Will Smith, man's world.
Like Will Smith told us, right. keep my wife's name out of your mouth. You know?
right. You're so funny.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
That's what Roger said. Isn't that what Aaron Rodgers said?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, hey, just worry about what you got to worry about. A lot of the same messages Sean Payton would talk about, you know, and tell his team. You know, why cause this distraction? So in sticking up for his own team or doing whatever he was that he thought he was helping out his own organization, you know, where I go is I don't know if it did. You might have put more of a spotlight on yourself now with this current situation and what you did there.
Yeah.
So that's where it's a little crazy. But, yeah, what I say is just like why – what was the good in – you can say, hey, you know, last year there was problems and Russell wasn't his best and there's a lot of reasons that that went on and, you know, we can blame some of the prior coaching staff and, hey, we had people here in this building too who we could blame. It got to go all around here, right? Instead of saying that, you know, it came out very harsh onto one guy.
Yeah.
And one guy you don't know, one guy who's done a lot of good things in the NFL and is a great person. And I think that's where it's like a no-no in the NFL to do that in general. And then in this case here, yeah, it looks self-serving or petty and just not exactly smart tactical by Sean Payton.
Yeah, I think all that sounds right. I think he's a guy from the outside looking in who prides himself on shooting from the hip, telling it like it is, not being scared
exactly
to tell it like
right.
it is.
That's what I love about Sean Payton.
He just went
Sean
a little
Payton.
Over the line when he started talking about other people in that way outside of his organization.
That's where, you know, I don't get it. And good for Aaron Rodgers sticking up for Nathaniel Hackett. He should. Nathaniel Hackett, you know, listen, I'm a little biased here too. I like Nathaniel Hackett. My young career with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he was one of the quality control guys, okay? His dad is, like Aaron Rodgers said about Nathaniel Hackett, he's one of my favorite coaches of all time.
No, he said arguably.
Arguably.
I was like, who are you arguing with?
Yeah, right.
Yourself?
Right.
Like, who's that?
Well,
he's arguably one of the best coaches. I was like,
arguably, his father was my favorite position coach I ever had. It's not arguably. It's definite, right? They got a way about them. Now, you can argue whether they just, you know, were they fit to be head coaches? Okay, certainly. We have that discussion. And as it looks, no. But it doesn't mean they're not good coaches in what they do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's where Hackett has gained Rodgers' trust and brain and heart and all that is because what I've said about the dad. Not only is it a good football mind who knows how to put together an offensive game plan and all that, he's very detailed. And as a quarterback, he makes you feel like he's in the fight with you. And that goes a long way for quarterbacks. Sean Payton's good at doing that as well. I just don't know why Sean Payton did that. That's the biggest thing there. It is kind of crazy. And, of course, it puts, I think, now more pressure on him. It's going to make the Week 5 game. You certainly lit a fire and gave the Jets, right, some bulletin board material.
Plug and Play 16 says, hey, fellas, as a Broncos fan, I just got to say I cannot wait for Jets-Broncos October 8th. We don't have that game, do we?
No, we don't. I know. No, I don't think we
can't
do have
flex
that one.
Into anything but that early either.
That'll, I mean, this is a Jets football team that we know is extremely talented and all that.
Like, they didn't need extra motivation.
No, they did not. And you know, listen, I know the point he was trying to make. You know, hey, yeah, things were not great in Denver last year. We get that. Yeah, they were into winning the offseason. And then he's saying, hey, look what happened during the season. It meant, you know, Jack Diddley squat, right? So I get what he's saying there in that department.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't know if he needed to go as scorched earth as he did, right? And, you know, what I will say to that, too, is, you know, I know Nathaniel Hackett certainly deserves the blame for last year and all that, too. But as we talked about, there was a lot of things that went on, you know. He got hired by a George Payton, who had, you know, a lot of say what was going on in the organization, right? There was a lot of things going on around that. The of course, the ownership was changing, all right? And then also, hey, like, all right, George Payton, other people, whatever, Nathaniel Hackett certainly can blame himself for some of this, but Russell Wilson, too. You know, I said this today earlier on Pro Football Talk. I mean, he doesn't get just a free pass.
Yeah,
I know, like we talked about in the quarterback rankings, he didn't have great offensive line, no running game, you know, not great pass protection. There was still a lot of wide open receivers and people that I go, Russell Wilson, I've seen you make that play 1,000 times in your career, and he didn't do it. And also, too, within that, with the Russell Wilson thing, I want to say, when have you ever heard of a quarterback having their entourage and their own office and their people in their room and thinking that's going to be successful in the organization? Oh, my people are here. My posse's here. Whoever, whatever. They're all here around me. And, like, I mean, okay, we heard about Brady and Alex Guerrero. That's as much as I've ever heard anything ever. It was a star quarterback. And it only took him 4 Super Bowls to get the guy in the building and 6 other appearances in the Super Bowl. So, you know, that's where there's plenty of blame to go around. And, yeah, it's just that's a tough one. And a no-no by Sean Payton. And
yeah.
Yeah, a little reckless there with that one.
But I think you're right, too. He was probably trying to stick up for his current players, too. Like, these guys don't suck.
Right.
There was bad coaching last year.
Yeah.
So, in a weird way, he was trying to just, like, prop up his
own
guys, too, and make them feel a little bit better about the whole situation.
Right.
Jay Semmer says, can you explain why Sean Payton is a media darling and Mike McCarthy is media terrible? The results are similar or in McCarthy's favor. He developed Rodgers, more winning seasons, same Super Bowls. Payton did nothing post-Breeze. It just makes no sense.
Yeah, well, there's a lot that goes into that. First off, I mean, like, it's a good point, Jay Samir. Like, Payton only had 1 year without Drew Breeze. They went 9-8, right, with Jameis Winston. And he even did get hurt a little bit in that year. So let's not judge it too closely quite yet. I think here, Sean Payton, I think to what you said earlier, he's charismatic. He's real. He keeps it real with people behind the scenes. He talks to media people, you know, frankly, lets them maybe know the inside scoop a little bit. Or sometimes like he did with Florio when Florio tried to put out a tweet on one Sunday and he like tweeted out something right back at him, like insiders on the outside, just where they belong, right?
Yep. That
he's got a charismatic realness about him. He is an offensive genius. I think, you know, his ability to communicate, motivate, be real to the players, be real to the media, I think sticks more than Mike McCarthy's does. And then I think here's the biggest reason, too. Here's the other thing, is I think a lot of people look at it, and I, of course, I do a little this way. I look at it as Sean Payton, you know, made Drew Brees to a degree. I don't, and I'm not trying to say that disrespectfully. I know they both needed each other, but if you ask me who the star of that relationship was, I would go, it's Sean Payton. Because every time his offense is amazing. It's physical. It's imaginative and creative and does everything that way. You know, Breeze was not exactly the most super talented guy we've ever seen in the history of the sport, right? So his offense is cutting edge. He can run the ball. He can throw the ball, screens, whatever, has it all. McCarthy, on the other hand, I think we all look at it, and as you heard me say towards the end of the McCarthy-Green Bay era, like, the offense was the opposite of that. It lacked any imagination. I mean, we made fun of it going, it's slant flat. Here, Aaron Rodgers got to make magic happen. So I think a little bit goes into why the perception is the realness, the charisma, all the things you talked about with Sean Payton. And then I think Sean Payton is viewed a little bit more as the mad scientist, great offensive mind. And Mike McCarthy is more of the, hey, tough, and this is what he does and whatever else. But Aaron Rodgers kind of helped you in your offense there for a lot of years. And if you put Aaron Rodgers with, like, Sean Payton, I don't know how many yards he would have thrown for every year. So I think that's why it's viewed that way, you know, to a degree.
Yeah.
But it's a good question, Jason. Yeah.
Drew Brees needed Sean Payton more than, you know, Aaron Rodgers needed Mike McCarthy. And we've seen it, too, with that
Aaron Rodgers could play in any offense.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter. There's no offense that he couldn't play in his prime, and you just go, fuck, he's awesome, right?
Yeah.
Drew Brees, there was offenses where we went, he can't make that throw all the time and consistently and on that level. We need to do something else and take advantage of another positive in his game and take advantage of that skill set, right? So that was the difference there. You know, but the good question. And even the question above this is pretty good, actually, too.
Fat McAfee?
Yeah, let's read Fat McAfee's.
Hey, Fat. Why does Sean Payton get a pass for constantly coming up short in the playoffs?
Yeah.
It's been 13 years since he won a championship.
Hey, listen, I mean, this is a real thing.
They've had a good roster outside of quarterback,
they
too.
They have, and this is why I want to read this. See, this is, to me, if y'all was going to correlate anything together here, right, microcosm, big picture, right, and I just want to make sure I'm clear here. I think you know this. You've heard me say Sean Payton is the fucking man. I would argue he is the best offensive mind in football the last 20 years. Him, McDaniels, Shanahan, right? Andy Reid. I mean, it's a short list, right? And Sean Payton's on it. I don't give a damn what list it is. He's definitely one of the 5-6 best head coaches in football for my money. But, yeah, falling short in the playoffs. One, hey, listen, I'd be one to tell you I think the quarterback was a hair overrated, all right, especially at the end, okay? So that would be one thing. But these comments, what's the word I've used here a little bit? Reckless, right? Mm-hmm. I think if there was one flaw, I could look at Sean Payton's career. I would go reckless would maybe be the word I would use, whether that's bounty gate or some other things or some managing of games or, you know, penalties at inopportune times where he's got a great way of being detailed and creative. His teams play tough and renegade-like, but sometimes I feel like can go a little too renegade maybe at times. And I guess that would be my two cents. But, damn, we're still talking about an unbelievable coach here. And, yeah, I think, you know, hey, had some good teams. The middle of the 2012-13, they fell off. But that was Bounty Gate, and there were some issues there right. That really played into that. But, I, you know, of course, you could probably blame him on that a little bit as well.
Yeah, I'm a little different than most. I think it's because there are only one team that can win the Super Bowl every year. I feel like consistent
success. Yeah, people
success,
make it a little too much.
Like a Mike Tomlin or a Sean Payton, teams who are in it every year, depending on their, you know,
yeah, people talent. Make a little too of like that, yeah. In my opinion. He's only won one. Well, I want to be like, well, what about all those other fucking people who never won any, right? I mean, let's not forget about that. It's not that easy in a league where you try to make everything equal. And, hey, he had the Minnesota Miracle, right? He had, of course, maybe the worst call in NFC Championship history that should have been pass interference. He should have given them first and goal, mm-hmm. And they're going to win the game, right? So been a little unlucky, too, to go on top of that. Sean Payton's the man. He is that. I know he's going to try to continue to put toothpaste back in the bottle in this one.
Right.
But this one, this ain't going to die out. This is something that's going to be brought up from time to time throughout the year.
All right, so what would a successful season look like for all the new head coaches? We'll start with Sean Payton. The Broncos were 5-12 last year with the worst head coaching performance in the history of the NFL, according to Sean Payton. So with the talent they have, I mean, I don't want to get into specific win loss
yeah,
here necessarily.
We're not going to do that yet.
We'll do that in 2 weeks,
right?
3 weeks.
Right.
But yeah, what does a successful season look like for the Broncos, you think?
You know, in the playoff conversation, right, the last 2 to 3 weeks of the year, mm-hmm. I'm with you. The AFC, the AFC West, for me to just sit here and go, oh, if the Broncos don't make the playoffs, it's crazy. What? I mean, come on. I mean, this is a team that, you know, did not have a great last year. And then, of course, they're in the AFC West and the AFC in general, and we know how good that is. And they were 5-12 last year. I think a successful year for my money would be, you know, 500, maybe a little above 500. Russell Wilson has a year where we go, that was Russell Wilson again,
yeah.
Right? I think that's all we're looking for, you know? And then, like I said, just be in that talk, the conversation, but doesn't necessarily have to be in the playoffs, at least for not for me.
Yeah, Sean Payton said to USA Today, I'm going to be pissed off if this is not a playoff team, which makes sense. He should be, right?
He's like that. Well, that's what he is. I mean, and again, he took over the Saints in 2006, and they went to the NFC Championship game and lost to the Bears his first year. He's got great, you know, that's where I don't buy the fact of, you know, he was setting this up, this whole thing,
right,
in case it goes bad. Because I do think he's a guy that he thinks he's the man, right? I mean, he thinks he's one of the great offensive minds in the sport. He knows he's one of the better head coaches in football, and he's expecting to win. So I take him for his word of that. He will be pissed if they don't make the playoffs.
Pete says in my ear, what's more important, getting to the playoffs or fixing Russ? Which almost in my head, I'm like, if they don't fix Russ and they get to the playoffs, that's pretty good. That either means like they were able to do it without a good Russell Wilson, or like Jarrett Stidham came in and was rocking it.
Well,
I don't know. They might have to do both, obviously.
They have to do both, but I think the fix of Russ is maybe more important than the playoffs itself.
Yeah.
I think so. You know, one, to get that, okay, wait, it works between us. You know, we can make this work. He buys into me. Okay, he's a good player. Okay, we don't have to worry about quarterback the next 4 or 5 years. We're good.
Yeah.
All right, now I can start to figure out my team around Russ. I know what he does good and bad, and we can start to formulate around that just like he did with Drew Brees. So, yeah, I think that, you know, like you said, you'd like both, but if you had to err on playoffs or Russell Wilson, you know, looking like the $47 million quarterback he is, that's, I think, probably the more important thing.
Yeah, it's probably more crippling.
Well, big picture.
It's more crippling if Russ is just a black hole on your team and your salary cap situation.
Exactly right.
It's going to be hard to come back
from
that.
Right. And then conversations of who's going to be our next quarterback? What are they going to do with Russ? There's a Russell Wilson problem. That to me would be a bigger issue.
Colts were 4-12-1 last year.
Yeah.
They got a new coach. Shane Steichen comes over from the Philadelphia Eagles. What does a successful year look like for them, you think?
I mean, to me, just like not being 4-13, not being 5-12. I mean, the Colts are, and you heard, I don't know if you heard me say this, the only team I'd cancel out of the playoff conversation in the AFC, like clearly that I will cancel out is the Houston Texans. I feel like everybody else has a chance.
The Colts could do it.
I would not be shocked. I'm not saying I'm probably not going to pick them to make the playoffs when we have to do that in 2 weeks, right? But, like, would this be a shock with a team that has a top 10-ish defense, right? A new system on offense that's going to catch their division by surprise and other teams in the AFC by surprise a little bit, not having a great feel for it that way, right? You know, the offensive line, if they can bounce back and get back to anything they were 2 years ago or close to that, that's where, you know, I look at them to be, if they get hover around or close to 500 and Anthony Richardson shows growth at the position,
yeah,
to me, that's all you want, right?
Yeah.
And I think that would be a success for Shane Steichen.
See, I disagree a little bit. I think they could be 4-12-1,
yeah,
but if Anthony Richardson looks like the real deal, I think that's a successful season for them.
Well, yeah, okay.
Same record.
Yeah, yeah.
They could have the same record.
I hear you. If he looks great, I think that'll certainly lessen the blow of the 4-13 season.
Sure.
Certainly. Sean Payton and Shane Steichen, part of the reason they got this job is why? Because they can fucking coach quarterbacks. So people expect the quarterbacks to be good. So they got to make sure that looks good. That's the first thing. And, yeah, I'm with you there. But I think, you know, overall team expectations, yeah, I would think with what they got on their roster that they, if you told them right now, you know, and I know they would never admit it, but like, you know, if you were like, man, 4-13, they'd be like, fuck, we're better than 4-13. Yeah. We can do better than
that. Well, they had to play without Jonathan Taylor the whole year.
Well,
so,
yeah, they,
who knows?
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that.
Right, right.
The Houston Texans, the team that you were writing off in the AFC, they got DeMeco Ryans, comes over from the 49ers as their defensive coordinator, added some draft capital. What was the record last year?
3-13-1. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they, I just think CJ Stroud looked good. Defense looks like, oh, whoa, DeMeco Ryan's got these guys believing and flying around the football field a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the team is just showing progress. So I don't look at this one to go, oh, they need to be around 500 to look at it. I mean, here is a team that I look at and go, if they're 6-11 and C.J. Stroud looks good and, you know, our man Will Anderson is a force on the edge and the defense is a pain in the ass, and in that 6-11, they were competitive in a lot of those games they lost where it was, you know, we lost the game by a field goal, they're 5 points here, 4 points there, whatever else. I think that's what you're looking for from the Houston Texans.
Derek Stingley comes back and looks good.
Like, sure, right. Exactly right. Damian Pierce continues to, you know, kick some butt in that Shanahan offensive scheme they have there. They got a decent O-line. You know, it's better than decent. It's a good O-line. So I think that's what you're looking for. A team to win a few more games and be more of a pain in the butt against everybody.
And the Panthers, I did see our old guy, Matt Rhule. He was at Big Ten Media Days.
Looking
relaxed.
Yeah, I'm sure.
A good dude. He's a nice guy.
He's a great guy.
I like Matt Rhule a lot.
He is. And,
he chatted us up while we were there.
He's maybe more fit for the college game. He's been doing that. I know he has.
Temple and then Baylor bringing them back. I think he can do it in Nebraska. I think they're already recruiting really well.
That's good to hear.
They love their football there,
right,
too. So he is gone from Carolina. Frank Reich is in now. They had the number one pick there with Bryce Young. All right, so what were they last year? What was their record?
They were 7-10 last year.
That's right. They were on the cusp of the playoffs.
I know. They were hanging in there. You know, that's where, again, I don't think the expectations are high. I wouldn't say playoffs.
Mm.
I would say, you know, you lost your best offensive player in DJ Moore. Oof. You are starting a rookie quarterback. I feel like if they're in this ballpark of 7-10, 6-11, you know, 8-9, and Bryce Young looks good. Mm. You know, this is, I know people are going to look at it and go, ooh, they were close last year.
The last couple
of years.
So they
should be close again.
Maybe not the 2 years ago, but early on in the season, it looked like, oh, they might be something.
Yeah, right. It was.
Especially
with
that defense.
Exactly was. But so that's where their defense has got studs.
Yes.
There's no doubt about that. And that's where they can be a pain in the butt.
I think if they're not in the playoff mix the last couple of weeks, it'll be
a disappointment.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Because that division's nothing to
write home
about.
A weak playoff conversation about the Panthers around December. I think you're right. I think that's kind of what I'm saying. 7-10, 8-9. You know, yeah, they came down the stretch, and if they won the last four games of the year, they might have got in, or three out of the last four, and they would have gone in. That's at least how I kind of look at it.
And if Bryce Young continues to look short, that's a problem.
I can't wait to see what that does look like. I know they're raving about him and his command and all of that.
Cool.
I never doubt any of that, certainly. I want to see him on the field for real here.
The other half of the coordinator duo now coaching NFL teams for the Eagles, Jonathan Gannon. Gannon comes over to the Cardinals. They were 4-13 last year. What's a successful year for them? Kyler gets back on track.
I mean, yeah, I just think it's for them. It's very low. I mean, you could certainly sit here and start to go. I don't expect them to be a great team. They're telling you that Kyler's not going to be healthy, right? You know, they got rid of some older players and trimmed the fat on their roster a little bit. They made all these moves in the draft, and we were sitting there in my barn for what?
Yeah.
For next year's draft.
Yeah.
So they're telling you they're not ready this year. I think you just want to see people buy into the culture of Jonathan Gannon, right? You want to see Jonathan Gannon. I think people question whether he's worthy or capable of doing this job at a high level. I think you just want him to make the fan base feel confident in that. And then you want to see Kyler Murray continue to grow, get back healthy, you know, become a better leader, become more detailed, all the things we hear with Kyler Murray. I think that's all I look for there. I have the lowest expectations out of all these new head coach hires, I think, with that one right there, because I just think there's the most work to do. And, you know, for lack of a better way, maybe they were the most dysfunctional going into this process.
Yeah. And all the coaches, they have different challenges.
You don't have to pay for your lunch anymore. That's when I know they'll be doing well.
When they don't have to pay.
Their lunch.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
it's a free lunch.
Yeah, right. When their weight room's better. Because they lost that whole, you know, NFLPA report card thing.
That's right.
They made players pay for dinner.
Yeah.
And things like that. Yeah, right. So those are the things that got to go away. I'm joking
a
little bit.
It was probably at cost. You know, I'm not making a profit.
Oh, that makes it better.
Yeah, getting a discount is a great deal.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Want to make Mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat Mom to the good stuff from just $30.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All these coaches have something unique to work with their new clubs, and Shane Steichen might not have his running back here because Jonathan Taylor's in the news, not happy with how those talks are going. Jim Irsay, the owner there, is being very vocal about what he thinks about. He says if he's gone out of the league, if I'm gone out of the league, no one cares. The league continues to operate, which, you know, is true, actually. That is a true statement by Jim Irsay, but it seems like very counterproductive if you're trying to ingratiate yourself to your best offensive weapon.
Well,
on your team.
Yeah, that almost seemed like a somewhat of a measured threat a little bit. Basically,
I'm going to kill you.
Well, yeah, if you're not there and you want to hold out, the league's not going to miss you. We're going to keep going. We're going to keep going, right?
Yeah.
I feel like that's what he was kind of trying to say there.
Right.
Let alone he ignited a firestorm with his whole, the running back market, the CBA had been,
you know, already figured out. There were some agents acting in bad faith. I'm paraphrasing here as well, but that's the one that really set it off a little bit there, mm-hmm. as far as, you know, pissing your best player off a little bit, or just having a little compassion for the situation. You know, again, like what I said with Saquon Barkley, I'm saying with Jonathan Taylor, and this is where, you know, they're going to have the support of the locker room, because like I said to Florio, and I joke around, I said that, like, Jonathan Taylor could fight DeForest Buckner in the middle of the locker room, and we'd go, whoa, what a great fight. And then he could go out and race the wide receivers, and we'd go, damn, he's going to beat the receivers, right? And then he can go to the basketball court, and we'd go, let's have a dunk contest. And you'd go, whoa, Jonathan Taylor can be in the NBA dunk contest at 5'10". He can go through the legs. He can do 360. So these are your greatest athletes, and they're not being paid, like I said. Let alone in this one, here's one where, you know, and again, this is where it's a little bit of talking out of both sides of the mouth by the teams, the owners, and all that. They want to make Anthony Richardson, Shane Steichen wants to get off to a good start. What do they need? Oh, that's right. Their best offensive player is their running back. Yes. That's right. He's going to kind of make things look a little bit better than they are, right? So that's where I could see him feeling like it's disrespectful. And like I said with Sean Payton, I'd go back to the same thing with Jim Irsay a little bit and go, you're above these tweets. Stop tweeting. You're above this. You're like a god king. You own a football team. You got billions. Why are you getting into the pissant Twitter conversations about the running back market? Don't do that. It did no good for him, his team, or anything. And yeah, Jonathan Taylor is disgruntled and pissed off, which he should be.
First of all, it's X now.
I'm calling it Twitter.
He's X. Yeah, it's very impossible to call it X moving forward. But I think I saw a report. I don't know if it's confirmed. I don't know if it's rumors or something like that, that Jonathan Taylor was seeking upwards of maybe $16 million a year in an extension.
Well, that's where we can get into like a little bit. If you want to, when he talked about the bad faith of the agents, mm-hmm. I will say, for me on the outside looking in, and again, I don't talk to agents much, but it seems like some of the agents misgauged the running back market. There's no doubt about that. Whether that's Saquon Barkley's agent or Jonathan Taylor's agent. That maybe they were fed to believe that, wait, there was a number they could have got, right? And that time sailed and gone now, and now that's not on the table anymore. So, yeah, I think there was maybe, you know, some, I don't want to say bad judgment, but just a little misreading of the market in that department at least.
We got a poll here from Setting the Edge.
Yeah.
It wants to know, which is the better current NFL feud, Aaron Rodgers versus Sean Payton or Jonathan Taylor versus the Colts?
I think I'm more intrigued in the Jonathan Taylor versus Jim Irsay and the Colts.
That one
because they're on the same team.
Exactly, that hurts more for the Colts. Like the Aaron Rodgers and Sean. That's both fan bases love that. They're like, get him.
It is right. This one is, you know, yeah. This is in house, in family.
It's tough.
You know, this is an issue, and you know, it's just where it's brutal for these running backs. And again, I don't know if I have a fix. You know, you've heard me, but the pool, Florio gives me credit, which I appreciate, the pool for players who, you know, exceed their contracts, and we all put a pool of money in there for these running backs to get paid after the season's over, whatever it is.
Which there's already something like that in place for rookies.
There's like a rookie wage scale where if you outperform, like his contract this year as a second round pick is like $4.9 million because of some of the things he's done to, you know, up the amount of money he makes per year.
Right.
But still, not to the marketplace of, oh, wait, our go-to guy, our number one guy that we're going to depend on to make every big play this year is making $4.9 million, right? That's where it's insane. And, you know, to where I say they're speaking out of both sides of their mouth, and again, this is no easy fix here, and I get it, but, you know, running back teams, there's certain teams I want to say running back's not that important, but yet, like, okay, well, if he's not that important, why don't you trade him? Go ahead, trade him. Oh, that's right. He is important to you this year.
Yes.
This year, he's very important to you. But long-term-wise, he's not. And, again, that's where I don't know what they do for this whole problem. It's an issue. It really is. And I was going to say something else to add to that.
Maybe
here's the thing I was going to bring up. Just a little bit like, you know, I know how awesome running backs are. And how, you know, they are important to your team, certainly, right? We talked about, you probably heard me with Connor, there's so many other ways to make up for running back yards, though, now in the NFL, yes. right? The speed sweeps, the reverse. Hey, put Deebo Samuel tailback. Oh, we got a tight end screen here, a wide receiver screen here. Ooh, we got a pick play right here to throw the ball. Now our receivers are running back. He caught it at the line of scrimmage, and he's going to run up, right? So yep. there's all these. The quarterback runs, the quarterback design runs, the read option, the RPO. All that makes up for running back stats, right? So that's what hurts them. The creativity of offenses. And then what I would throw on to that, and I said this earlier today, and Pete, he got the answer right. This is what my mind was, too. What's the last team that you saw in the Super Bowl that was really based around their one running back? Like, I know the 49ers went to the Super Bowl, and they were based on their running game, right? Yeah. But you probably, if I ask you right now, I go, who was their running back in that Kansas City Chiefs 49ers game? Who was their 49ers running back? Right? Exactly. Okay, points
Raheem
over.
Raheem Mostert.
Exactly. There you go. Did Pete get in your ear?
No, he didn't.
Okay, good. He didn't cheat. But, but there. That. But and even them, they were still but by committee degree, right? The Chiefs have been in the Super Bowl three times. They've had a different running back all three times, right? The Rams went to the Super Bowl two out of, 4 years? It was different running back every time, right? When's the last time we saw a team that had the running back and you went, ooh, they play – behind the running back, and he's their guy, and they got to the Super Bowl.
Emmitt Smith.
But you got my point.
Yeah.
Me and Pete went to 2013 Seahawks with maybe Marshawn Lynch,
sure.
right?
Yep.
It's the last one he can think of. And then you get into it before that, and you start to go, well, who before that even, too?
Yeah, all the Patriots teams had different guys.
Right, the Colts team. So you'd have to maybe get into early 2000s Patriots, Corey Dillon. Mm. Then that might be the last one. As far as other than Marshawn Lynch. But all these things go against the argument of the star running back paying right. him a ton of money, which stinks.
Did you see what Travis Etienne said about it? Where when he was asked about it, he was like, I think running backs still get paid like Christian McCaffrey, but you have to do more. You have to be a Deebo Samuel.
Yeah, right.
Like if you are a Christian McCaffrey, Deebo Samuel, running back / slot receiver, maybe those guys do get paid.
Well,
still.
the two we're seeing get paid right now, right, are Alvin Kamara and Christian McCaffrey. Now, McCaffrey was a horror story until he went and got traded last year. I mean, before he got traded to the 49ers, everyone's like, well, see, he hasn't played much, and he ain't doing that much. See, this
why
is why
you
don't pay running back. And then he went to the 49ers, and everyone's like, he's the best running back in football. What a great trade.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we all like, you know, to have it our way. But then Alvin Kamara is the other guy, right? And there's another guy who, to your point, and to what Travis Etienne's saying, that is real. He receiver running back, but also... is he still worth $16 million right now?
Right.
I would say they'd probably say no. If they could get out of that contract right now, they would.
Right.
Yeah, so that's where, you know, it's a tough one. But at that point, it might be real. That's real. And maybe that's, yeah. I mean, I think he's onto something there.
So put on your GM cap.
Yeah.
It's future Chris right now. He's the GM of the Giants. Going to take his hometown team to the Super Bowl. Let's figure out which of these positions is most important to you.
Yeah.
And I know we have some graphics here, too, that show you how the Chiefs, Eagles, and 49ers have divvied up their money so far. Do you want to take a look at those first, or do you want to just go with where you think you
well,
would prioritize
I think
first?
they're good baselines.
Right, I think so, too.
Yeah, let's show them. I think they're worth
let's
talking
look at
about,
Chiefs
at least showing
here.
People. Yeah.
This was last year. Most of their money went to their quarterback. 19% went to their quarterback last year.
Yeah.
Oh, we got music now. Do we play music on our graphics now? Is that a new thing?
For this podcast, I think it is.
So I was listening in the car to the podcast a couple days ago, and all of a sudden just music started playing. I was like, oh, they're jazzing Chris up here. He got boring or something. But then I was like, oh, wait, they're probably showing a graphic right now. So if you're listening, there's a graphic, which is why you're hearing the music. We just didn't get boring. Quarterback at 19%. Defensive tackle, the big butts. The big butts, 14%. We got Chris Jones there, too,
right.
that makes a difference.
Right.
Then you got the interior on the offensive line,
right.
guards and centers at 12%.
Right.
And then you got wide receivers after that. So that's an interesting top four.
It is. It's a very interesting top four. Listen, salary cap spending, how you allot that, there's a few things that go into this, right? It's not just like a hard line formula where it's like, I get 20% here. Things are dictated. One, you know, hey, if I'm a GM and I know my offensive coordinator's the man and he knows how to get people open like Josh McDaniel did for the Patriots forever, why would I pay fucking receivers $24 million a year when he gets everybody on our team open all the time, right? So that plays into it. Defensive scheme, the quarterback, of course. If I have Patrick Mahomes, then yes, you know, wide receiver and other positions like that, and they can maybe fall by the wayside a little bit.
2.6% for running back, the lowest paid position group on your Super Bowl champion.
Well, there you go. Well, then when you have Patrick Mahomes, you know you're not going to run the ball much, so that's another thing. So, yeah, so those are all, I think, you know, a little bit about what dictates, you know, how you spread this around. But, like, you know, I think in general, you're going to look at most teams that go to the Super Bowl or the teams that we see in the competitive Super Bowl window every year. And, you know, I know there's a few outliers. I know, but I think in general, you're going to see something similar to what we see from, okay, the Chiefs, the Eagles, the 49ers, and what you hear me say all the time. What do you think? You're my friend. What do you think I'd want to spend my money on other than quarterback?
I was just going to say quarterback. Right. That was an easy one to win. I'm going to say the big dudes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look at the teams, the top teams in football, the three best teams in football, the Chiefs, the Eagles, and the 49ers. You just take quarterback away out of the conversation for the Chiefs, and what is it? It's D linemen and O linemen on all three teams. It's the Eagles leading the way with defense, ends, and tackles. The 49ers leading the way with defensive tackles and defense ends, and then a tight end, right? So there you go. It's big people. Every now and then we have a team that's fast and not about big people. The Rams, they won the Super Bowl a few years ago. They did it with some skill guys in a different way.
And then Aaron Donald that made up for it. Well,
and
defensive
right,
side,
they had some special guys that can make up for a few things here and there. Exactly right. That's rare. I think more times than not, you see teams built like the Niners, the Eagles, the Patriots for 20 fucking years in a row, right? Just Bricker Seymour, Vince Wilfork, Matt Light, you know, all the damn linemen they had throughout the years. I mean, that's where they're special. So that's where I would start. And, yeah, I mean, if you're going to make me start right there, I mean, the tackle and D end is where I'm starting.
Which you see in the draft now, too, right? And that's another indication, right? D ends go off the board pretty quickly. Defensive tackles, dominant ones, go off the board pretty quickly.
In my perfect world, I would invest more in tackles in the interior part of the O-line. Okay? That's where the Chiefs are interesting. See, the Chiefs...
Tackles are on the second page.
No, they're I know.
6%.
Now, they'll be different this year with them paying Juwan Taylor, who they got a ton of money. And, you know, they had Orlando Brown on a franchise tag number last year, so that probably helped things out there a little bit as well. But, yeah, they actually took more of the, let's protect the middle and give him room, because when the guy's coming around the edge, he can make them fucking miss and step up and do all this kind of crazy crap, right? But I'm a little bit more like, I would err on the tackles. I think you can protect interior O linemen more, right? Like you can protect, you can protect your weak guard by sending the center over there and doing things in protection to help them out. So I'm more of like, let's pay the tackles. And then, yes, I'm going to D end. In my perfect world, I would want one premier D end, one premier D tackle. I wouldn't go two premier D ends and then two tackles, right? I would want one premier and one premier. Then you can mix and match, put them on the same side sometimes. Oh, wait, they have a mismatch with this guy, right? Our right D tackle is killing their right guard, right? Mm-hmm. Ooh, they have to do all these things. Hey, let's put the D end somewhere away from that because now they're sliding to our tackle. And so that's what I would look at right there. That would be the first two things. I mean, O-line and D-line, obviously, but tackle, D-N, D-tackle, then interior O-line is where I'd go from there.
I think it's interesting, too, and if we have the Eagles one, we can throw that one up here, because I'm looking at trends with all three of these teams, and like you mentioned, yes, the big dudes up front, offensive and defensive line, but for the Chiefs, Eagles, and 49ers, wide receiver is in the top six for all three of those. So it's like we talk about the skill position of running back being devalued. The skill position of wide receiver, and you see how many of those are taken early in drafts each and every year. It seems like wide receiver, like teams will spend on wide receiver.
You gotta have good receivers and guys that can make plays and go above and beyond, like we talk about. You know, there's this thing right now. I know everybody, you don't need to have a star number one receiver to go to the Super Bowl. You gotta have somebody that's really good or somebody that makes up for it. Okay, maybe you got Patrick Mahomes, you can get away with it. Okay, great. All right. But even within that, I mean, they're spending money on the position. Yeah. They had versatility and depth in it as well. But yeah, the game is set up for these guys right now, let alone, like you just said, we can give them the ball, reverses, running back plays, screens, all that type of stuff, right? So, you know, I know people, like, everyone wants to go, well, Randy Moss, you never won the Super Bowl. Okay, but, like, look at most teams that have gone to the Super Bowl, won the Super Bowl. I mean, you know, Ja'Marr Chase, I don't know, last time I checked, he's pretty good. The Bengals got there, they lost. I think Cooper Kupp was kind of good that year the Rams won the Super Bowl.
Kind of.
A.J. Brown was kind of good last year. I know the Chiefs didn't have Tyreek Hill, but last time I checked, Travis Kelce was a pretty big pass, you know, catcher for your football team. Tyreek Hill won the Super Bowl when he was with the Chiefs. Oh, Mike Evans was with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, wasn't he? Oh, and Antonio Brown and Gronk. So that's such a tired argument. I'm so sick of hearing people go, oh, the receiver thing, just because of the Patriots. The Patriots had a special thing. Mm-hmm. They had a coordinator and a quarterback and everything forever that they could find ways and game plan and get people open, even when you're like, who the fuck is this guy? He's open. Oh, my God. And Brady sees it, and he's smart, and he throws it to him. You know, so that's
if you have an all-time great NFL quarterback,
right? With an all-time great offensive mind,
yeah. Maybe you don't need the elite of the elite.
And that's where the Chiefs went down to 8.9%, where they probably would have been way up higher percent if they kept Tyreek Hill.
But even so, too, with Brady, I mean, we saw when he had Randy Moss that one year, it was
insane.
It was just you giving them that, and they are that much better.
Right, right. I mean, it wasn't because of Randy Moss that they didn't win the Super Bowl. I mean, last time I checked, he went down and caught the game-winning touchdown, and Eli and company brought him back with the great clutch drive. But yeah, I think that's a little bit of a tired subject for me. But yeah, I think O-line, D-line, okay.
Can I give you a position that's kind of standing out to me?
Go ahead.
Being like lesser than maybe I'm not surprised here, because you look at the Eagles, you look at the 49ers, and it's just for the 49ers, the only position group making less are the kickers, punters, and long snappers. That's safety. For the 49ers. And maybe, again, it's team unique, but it's the same way for the Eagles, too. It's like it's safety, linebacker, and then kicker, punter, long snapper. So what about that part of the defensive secondary, safety?
Those are where I would try to find bargains. I would be more front seven based.
Yes.
I'd want to pay maybe one corner in my world and then have a lot of good throughout the rest of the secondary. Not like I don't need to have an all-star secondary. I'd want to be more a little bit like the 49ers and the Eagles in the department where I just want my front seven to be so good and so dominant that we get pressure all the time. And, hey, the secondary is good but not great, but it looks better now because our front seven's always on the quarterback's ass, right? You know, a little bit like the 49ers when they went to the Super Bowl and lost to the Chiefs. I mean, that was the year of Richard Sherman. He's one of the five highest-ranked corners in football.
Yeah,
he did good that year, but it also you had 1 seconds to throw the ball before Bosa hit you and everybody else. I want one corner. But here's if I went O-line, D-line, right? We know quarterback, O-line, D-line, specifically tackle, DN, then D-tackle, then interior O-lineman.
Okay.
I think my next one up would be middle linebacker.
Ooh. You're old school.
I'm old school, and to me, it's part of the new school. I mean, the Chiefs can't win and stop the RPOs and the runs and all the shit they can't do unless they had two phenomenal middle linebackers that could cover the field and cover a lot of holes in Willie Gay and Nick Bolton, right? There's a reason the 49ers, Fred fucking Warner in the middle all the time. No doubt about it. You know, even Edwards for the Eagles last year, who went to be the free agent signing by the Bears. That, to me, right now, is an extremely important position because of offenses like we talked about. Oh, wait, Christian McCaffrey's at tailback. Oh, wait, he's at receiver. Oh, wait, you got to match up with George Kittle. Oh, no, he does. Oh, gosh. Okay, no, now I got to take on a pulling guard and take him on. The skill set is very vast for that position right now. And that, to me, would be another one where I would be wanting to pay the linebacker department.
And you would not pay running backs. You're part of the problem. You're part of the problem.
I am. Yeah. Right now, I am.
Yeah.
Now,
future Chris is part of the problem.
It is. Right now, I would not. I would be, I'm going to draft a running back maybe every year, every other year in the mid to late rounds. And I'm going to continue to have Isaiah Pacheco and somebody else, all these guys that are, hurting the own cause of the overall running back, but show you that you can find guys in the middle rounds and continue to cycle through and you can have a successful offense. I hate to say that on a personal level, but yeah, that's how I would do it too. I know.
It's those game-breaking players that are valuable, right? Those wide receivers that, like you always say, can take a five-yard slant, Jamar Chase style, and take it 80 yards to the house.
Yeah.
And it's just rare to find that in a running back, right? If you can't find, like, the game breaker, you just got to find someone healthy and good enough for the job.
Exactly. I think that's what we're talking about. You know, there are some extenuating circumstances or some outliers and all that. Yeah, certainly. And that's why, I mean, I think that's why the Giants were willing to offer Saquon, you know, 13 a year before the year or early on in the offseason. Because they recognize, wait, he is a game breaker. He's still got something to him here.
Derrick Henry's got
right.
to pay.
But we're not going to commit to him 5 years down the road still and throw out so much money that it doesn't even make sense. Because like we said, the longevity, the production, yeah, we might not find Saquon Barkley, but we can find other ways to, you know, make up for a good chunk of it. And that's what's hurting that group there.
All right, good. I like that.
All right.
We got into the brain of the future Chris Sims. How many years do we have in this podcast before that's a reality? Before you're running some
I don't know. I mean, how many times, you know, it depends how many times you take breaks and go to baseball games on me and all
you're
that.
You're just going to get sick of it. You're going to quit the podcast.
God,
even
hell
without
this
that
guy.
GM.
I got to go find another job.
Yeah, we'll give it all to Connor, and then I'll just be Connor in the middle here with both of us gone.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. This summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
All right, ready for Ask Me Anything?
Let's do it.
How much time we got here, Pete? I don't even know how long we've been going.
We're probably about 55 minutes right now.
Wow, somewhere good judge there. Of time.
Thank
you.
You
got that play clock Thank in your you. Head. Okay, all right, another 20 minutes, half hour here. All right, Joe Burrow, we start with Joe Burrow. Man, when I saw that news and like he helped off the field, I was like, I hate training camp. Let's just all stay home until week one. And if we all get hurt week one playing in an actual game, I'm actually better with that than getting hurt in training camp. But I digress. Florida boy says to you, should Joe Burrow give the Bengals a hometown discount or ask for $270 million? So Justin Herbert got paid. We're still waiting for Joe Burrow. What would you do if you were him?
If I was Joe Burrow, I'd be looking. I don't want to say hometown discount, right? I don't want to tell anybody. But I'm looking to make it to where I have Jamar Chase and T. Higgins here with me. And some other guys on the defense and have a team around me. You know, that's one of the things that I brought up last week when Herbert signed his deal, because Herbert's deal is pretty team-friendly too. I feel like if Burrow was going like, whoa, I want scorched earth, I want every last fucking penny you got, I'm not going to be mad at him. But he is going to look different than the rest of the star quarterbacks we got right now, right? You know, you could certainly look at Hurts, Herbert, Mahomes, what Aaron Rodgers just did, Josh Allen, and you can sit here and go, very team-friendly deals by those quarterbacks. And I think that does put pressure on Joe Burrow, you know, to do that. I do. And I, knowing him and being around him a little bit, the kid's no idiot. We know that. He knows how important Jamar Chase and some of these guys around him are for him to be successful, legacy, all of that.
You know, and I think that he will give them a discount to a degree. He's not going to hold their feet over the fire for every last penny.
It is funny. It's like it is a calculation that you do have to do because there are some people that say, take every penny that you can get. Do not let the owners take any of that money. But if you're Joe Burrow and you're thinking about 10, 20 years down the road, if you have won a Super Bowl, if you're in that upper echelon of quarterbacks of all time, like you want that. And
exactly
what is that
right.
worth to you? Is that
that's
worth
exactly
taking
right.
when you're living in a salary cap environment?
Right.
What's that worth to you? That's
exactly right. I think that, you know, Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Herbert, they're Jalen Hurts, they're legacy aware. They are. You know, they welcome it. And they are welcoming it in the fact that, yeah, okay, if I got to take a little less, if I got to have $250 million in the bank rather than $320 million, mm-hmm. it's not going to make that big of a difference to me, right? You know, and of course, you know, you saw what Tom Brady, that became a popular thing with what helped the Patriots. Michael Jordan and the Bulls, until his last 3 years of his career, he was making single-digit millions. And like, way underpaid. I mean, remember, the NBA made a new rule for him. I'm like, the salary cap doesn't count for Jordan. Yeah. You can pay him $38 million in 1996.
And we'll give you a basketball team in Charlotte. Just keep playing.
So, you know, yeah, I think he's very aware of that. I do. And you know, kudos to Aaron Rodgers for doing what he did for the New York Jets as well. But the Burrow thing, man, that stinks, the injury.
It's been all these training camps that he has had, right?
He can't get a training camp.
2020, he had COVID. 2021, ACL recovery. 2022, his appendix burst.
Right.
And now he's got a calf strain.
Calf strain. And listen, there's some talk here, right? This is significant, this injury. They could say what they will. One, like, the way, and if anybody goes on social media and you watch how he did it, like, well, listen, I've seen guys pull their calf muscles before. They don't all go down to the ground and act like somebody shot them, right? Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you see guys, most times you see guys pull their calf muscles. Ooh, they can stand up. They can still walk off the field, whatever else, right. All right? That's usually a mild strain or pull or whatever, right? This one was one where it was like, whoa, no weight on the leg right away, down to the ground, carted off the field, right? And then the biggest inkling I have is that, you know, the NFL, they use certain phrases. And here's the clip if you're watching on YouTube. You see the right foot right there went as he tried to push and extend it. And he was wearing a sleeve on the right calf anyways.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Right? Which makes me think there was maybe some tightness there or some issue to be had anyways. But, you know, here's the language that I'm talking about is that you hear injuries. Oh, this is 4 to 6 weeks, right? You know, this is 6 to 8 weeks, right? If this was a minor calf strain, you would have heard 2 to 3 weeks. That's what you would have heard, 2 to 3 weeks. They said several, which means it's definitely more than three, right? And don't be asking then. And it's going to be four or more, and it's going to, you know, to what you brought up with his missing training camp, it sounds like he won't be ready till the end of training camp, if not the regular season. And what I just say that's tough is because we just, you know, the AFC North is stacked, like we talked about. The AFC is stacked. He didn't get to practice a lot in training camp last year. What did he do in week one against the Steelers last year? Remember, he threw 5 interceptions in that game.
Right.
You know, was a little rusty the next week against the Cowboys. They started off 0-2. You know, the AFC is in a state right now. You start off 0-2 now, you know, you're climbing an uphill battle here. So that's where it hurts for the Bengals and Burrow, and I feel for them.
Yeah, I think the Bengals, depending on the health of Joe Burrow, are probably the team that I'm going to pick to win the North, but maybe it's the Ravens. I don't know now. I'm trying to think. Dolphins out east, I think. I keep thinking that's going to be my team that I'm going to pick.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't decided yet fully, but Liam Crooks 6 says, hey, Chris, big fan of the pod. How do you think the Dolphins defense will fare without Ramsey? And what player do you think will benefit the most under the Fangio system? So the Dolphins are stacked.
Stacked.
Ramsey, like, what are we hearing on him? Is it?
It's going to be till December, most likely. It was a complete meniscus tear. He's going to be out for significant time.
Because when I heard, like, not ACL, MCL, I was like, maybe kind of hopeful it would be less significant, which it is than that, I guess.
It is less, but still significant to where, it's going to be an extended period of time. And the type of injury where you go, okay, he might be back in December, but is he going to really be Jalen Ramsey then?
Yeah.
Like, when will he look like, you know, Jalen Ramsey? So that's where it's unfortunate. Again,
And I know I've been a little bit labeled as like a Jalen Ramsey hater because I said he wasn't a top corner in football anymore. He's still a top secondary player. It still hurts their team. He still has great versatility and would give them defense great versatility because of what he does, right? I'm not in love with him as an island corner anymore, but he's awesome at nickel, safety, you know, can play big tight ends and cover them man-to-man. He's a really good blitzer. So he takes away a few tricks that they might have had with the Vic Fangio defense. That's where it really stinks. But still, like, a stacked defense across the board. They're awesome. I mean, he was almost like icing on the cake, really, when you break it down. But, yeah, you know, hope he gets back and, you know, good luck with the recovery there for Jalen Ramsey.
How do you think Bradley Chubb plays in this system? Because he didn't come on the scene and he wasn't a world beater. He got paid, but
he got paid, right? He got paid, and we sent the really the last half of the year going, he's not as good as Jalen Phillips, right, here on the podcast. Jalen Phillips was the best pass rusher on their football team. Yeah, there's spotlight is on Bradley Chubb this year. This is a big year. You know, first off, this is a defensive coordinator that we know knows how to get people on the edge after the quarterback and all that. You know, he's been around a lot of them through his years, whether it was Aldon Smith and the 49ers, he had Khalil Mack with the Bears. I mean, it's a 3-4 scheme. It's made for Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips to kick some ass off the edge. So, you know, you got them. Of course, Christian Wilkins in the middle, right? They got a lot of other good defensive linemen. They got a ton of secondary. They got very versatile linebackers that can run around and mix match with different personnel sets. The Dolphins are still going to be one of the best teams in football with or without Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, injuries suck. 11 Mims says, how do you feel about all the injuries that happen in practices before the season even starts? Garrett Wilson says he likes to practice how he plays, but watching clips of him hard cutting in practice one-on-ones is scary, and he already has hurt his ankle because of it.
Yeah, well, listen, there's only one way you can get ready for the season is you gotta practice and be aggressive like it's season time. You know, to where I would argue with all of this is we are doing it. There's a reason we have more injuries now than we did 15 or 20 years ago, in my opinion. I have this conversation with friends all the time in the NFL. You know, this is to me where the NFLPA has actually done a disservice to the players. You know, they think less time training and less time practicing is better for the players. It's not. It's not. Science says that. Football gut and intuition says that, right? It's guys are not enough in football shape all the time. So they've done their own workouts and they've cut and done all that and they think they're good to go. And then it's like, yeah, that was a workout and that was cool for an hour long, but this is the hour and 50 minutes of practice now. Yeah. And you've done three times as many cuts and we haven't gotten a chance to get you in shape for that or anything because we had only this much time on the practice field. I mean, it was phase one and we couldn't do this, and it's phase two and we could do this, but we can't do that. And I don't think players are as in football shape when they get into training camp as they used to be.
Did you see any significant injuries back in your playing days? What was like the biggest one that was a bummer for you when you were playing?
Gosh. You know, I had some old linemen get hurt and go down. Man, you know, I'm trying to think here. Let me just think real quickly. My Bucks football team early on in my career, I don't think we had a huge significant early season injury that was like, oh, man, that's crushing. I'm trying to think.
Because you guys were working out.
I will say to a degree, yeah, I do. We were breaking rules and everything, and we didn't give a shit, and we were supposed to only be out there for 30 minutes, you know, for a John Gruden walkthrough. You think John Gruden give a fuck about what the NFL said? If somebody was going to tattletale on him, we were going to be out there for an hour and 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah, and we had leaders that were constantly, hey, we got to get in shape, we got to do this, and pushed us that way. And we were a team a little bit like how I know Andy Reid runs it. Andy Reid's still old school. People still go to Andy Reid in their practices and go, I can't get over how many plays they run, how much they run around. Because he knows we can't hit and do all that, so I'm going to make practice fast and pace is going to go because we're all going to be in shape by the time the season comes around. We're not going to have soft tissue pulls and stuff like that. So that's how he slowly works them into it.
What about playing in the preseason? Because I feel like we're getting to the point where in maybe 2 or 3 years, I'll be playing in some preseason games.
Yeah, no, I think that's a delicate balance there according to how old your team is, right? You know, certain positions I think needed a little bit more than others. I think it's hard for just go, oh, O-line can't play at all, right? Then they get in the season and they're like, holy shit, I haven't blocked an Aaron Donald once the whole year, and now it's week one and I got to do it for real, right? So some of these positions you got to get a little feel, but yeah, you got to try to do your balancing the scale of, you know, the right work of, okay, we got some live bullets in preseason, and okay, it wasn't too much. Let's get out of the game. We're safe and healthy. And then where can I infuse some intense practice stuff where I can trust the environment a little bit more? And I think that's what coaches are trying to find the balance of right now.
And we said this last year, some of the most intense, probably best practices that the teams have is not in the game. It's when they take on other teams and those joint practices, it seems like now.
I think so.
I say sell tickets to those now, because those are almost the most intense things we see in the
football. It does. It's again, with the lack of, you know, practice time, preseason play, it's a good, cheap way to get, hey, some new, fresh talent in here. You don't have to look at our guy over and over, right? The other thing that I always say that it does, and where Bill Belichick was cutting edge, well, Belichick, not only was it like a fresh look for his guys and added some energy to the practice, right? You know, it's not as scripted. You don't know what to expect, right? It's not the same guy for the 12th day in a row where you're a little tired of it, right? Belichick also was probably stealing ideas from the other team as they were going along. So I used to be like, why would anybody want to practice against him?
That's
up there?
Point, yeah.
He's just going to take everything, or he's going to figure out how they're doing something he wanted to figure out, right? But the unspoken best thing about it was, you know, hey, your second team guys, right, or whatever, there's no scout team they have to do, right? You got the other team you're playing.
Yeah.
That's what people forget about practice, is that, you know, the first team defense is out there and they're running some reps and going and doing what they got to do. Okay. And now it's an offensive period. The first team defense got to go out there sometimes and give a look for them and like act like they're the scout team or do whatever. And that's the shit that wears you out as you go on through training camp. So having a new team in there takes away that aspect of the training and the training camp.
Got another couple Jets questions. Man, Jets are like dominating here
everywhere,
Atlanta, right?
I mean, have you not been paying attention to football? It's every football show or sports show. The Jets come up within the 20 minutes.
We might have to do one pod, no Jets questions. But here we go. We got a couple here. Henrichson's John says, Chris, I'm curious on whether the Jets and Coach Saleh will direct Rodgers to take more chances, less chances, or about the same.
Uh-huh.
We know Aaron doesn't like risk.
Uh-huh. I think they are. Yeah, I think that's part of the, you know, the Aaron Rodgers push is, hey, you know, first off, you're Aaron Rodgers. Why are you settling anyways, right? Be more aggressive. Wait, we got Garrett Wilson. We got some talent here. You know, we're not looking for the check down anymore. Hey, we got an unbelievable defense too. If you make a mistake, we'll be okay. The game won't be over. You got a little room for error here. You're not going to beat Josh Allen and that damn Miami Dolphins Tua all-star team there with people going by being conservative and, you know, coming away from the game going, oh, I was 24 for 29 for 238 and one touchdown and no interceptions. That ain't going to get it done. You're not going to win. You're not going to win in the AFC. You're not going to beat Mahomes and Burrow and Josh Allen with that stat line. You know, if he wants to win some of these games this year, it's going to have to be 21 for 32 maybe.
Yeah.
But it's 300 yards off those 22 completions, and it's three touchdowns and one interception. And I think there is a concerted effort to get him to be a more aggressive.
I don't know, but he reads the headlines. He reads how much Dak has gotten ridiculed for all the interceptions last year, how many times people bring up 15 interceptions for Josh Allen. Now, you have a different take on the interception than maybe most analysts out there.
Well, I think, you know, we're a little stuck into like these themes of like the late 2000, like 2008 and 9 and 10 and 11 and 12, where it was just take care of the ball. Don't mess the game up. Take care of the ball. You know, the game is cyclical. It goes in little patterns and rhythms right now. And yeah, I'm not a believer in, you know, if you're throwing 5 and 6 interceptions, you're probably not being aggressive enough and you've left plays on the field and your team didn't win as many games. Right? You've heard me say this before. I mean, the guy who led the interceptions in football 2 years ago won the Super Bowl, and Matthew Stafford, you know, so that you can't forget about that. You know, I'm going to pull up some other ones. Yeah. I'm about being aggressive. The game is about explosive plays and making plays right now. Right. So yeah, I mean, 2 years ago, Stafford had 17, Herbert had 15, Josh Allen had 15, Joe Burrow had 14, Mahomes had 13, Brady had 12, right? You know, there's last year. over 2 years ago. So then they go into last year, you know, Dak had 15, but still one of the more aggressive, scary offenses in football. It was just a little too much, and especially because he missed games, right? Josh Allen, where everybody's talking about his turnovers, you know, he threw 14 last year, two more than Mahomes, which is – people talk about Allen like, whoa, man, he was turning it over everywhere last year. And I always have to look at the stats and go, are we talking about the guy that, you know, barely turned it over just a little more than everybody else and less than some? But, yeah, it's I think we are at that era right now where it's not about 72% and no interceptions and all that. You got to strike while the iron's hot, and when there's big plays to be had, you got to get them.
But even some of that is team-dependent, too, right? Because I think for the Giants and Daniel Jones, like, that is maybe a situation where you go, all right, I do actually want you to be a little more protective of the
football. No doubt about it. That was a team where, they had to play that way.
Right.
They're not good enough to overcome it the other way. What frustrated us with Aaron Rodgers and all that is one, hey, there's receivers open, you're Aaron Rodgers, you guys got some guys that are explosive, and you're leaving points, and your team's good enough, you know, to overcome an interception every now and that and all of that. And that's where I felt like he did a little disservice to them.
They got good running backs. They got Breece Hall. Once he gets back healthy, when was that? When's that going to be? Do we know?
Yeah, I mean, it's not yet.
Yeah.
You know, I would think that's going to be something, you know, midway through the year. We start to see Breece Hall and start to see what he can do once again.
I got Michael Carter, who I like too, but could they have Delvin Cook? Israel DMS7 says, what kind of contenders does Delvin Cook make the Jets? So he was at practice, in street clothes, watching, I guess seeing if it was his cup of tea, seeing how much they will offer. If they add him, where does that take the Jets?
I mean, the Jets are a contender either way. I mean, no doubt about that. Dalvin Cook, this would be the perfect situation for him. This, to me, would be it. You know, I mean, it's that's where they're here in Miami make a lot of sense. Fields open. It's not just about, oh, let's stop the run game, right? You got to worry about Garrett Wilson and the other receivers and Lazard and everybody else. Corey Davis, they got a good tight end. Oh, man. So you can't always just go, oh, we're worried about smash mouth Dalvin Cook. It lends itself to opening running lanes. It lends itself to, oh, here's a screen pass, right? To me, that's where it's the perfect match. So, yeah, I mean, he's obviously better than anything they have on their roster right now. Plus, I think what they're looking at, too, is going, wait, we got a veteran quarterback, right? Do we really want some of these young guys who maybe we don't trust in third down protection and things like that being the guy that protects Aaron Rodgers for us? I think there's a few things that go into play here. You know, let alone, hey, we're a Super Bowl team. Are we really going to trust, like, Michael Carter with carry 22 against the Patriots, you know, in the middle of October or whatever? You know, I'm sure those are the things that are scaring them a little bit. So, they get Dalvin Cook, you start to go, oh, shit, what do you defend on that Jets offense?
Sometimes with the Ravens and Lamar Jackson, you're trying to figure out what you should defend, the pass or the run. And they got a new offensive coordinator this year. My transitions are back. Did you hear that one? That was a smooth one.
Boom.
Coach Mills says, in your heart of hearts, how do you think Lamar and company will do under Todd Monken? So Monken used to be an offensive coordinator all around the league with Tampa, with the Browns, and spent 3 years with Georgia, won a couple national championships with them, and now he's back with the Ravens as their offensive coordinator. Apparently, Lamar Jackson now will call plays better, Todd Monken thinks, by ditching that wristband. So he's making him get rid of that wristband. You just call it off the top of your head now, I guess, or what are we trying to accomplish with that?
Well, I think it's you got somebody in your ear, right?
Yes.
So you just got to be able to listen and repeat.
Okay.
And I know some plays can be long. I'm guessing Monken feels that, hey, my offense is pretty concise. Coming from college, I would think he didn't have, like, long-winded long plays, right? It's got college kids. You got cycling in all the time. So I know that they have found ways to code things and do all that. I like that. I do. Now, and where I like it too is, you know, I'm a believer, and not to say this is totally true, because again, Tom Brady, I saw him read off his damn wrist thing all the time too, because, you know, Josh McDaniels, he'd have short stories on there some plays. He'd be like, man, play 82 is literally four paragraphs long.
Yeah, we need 24
seconds. West right slot, he went to a store over the hill, came back home, you know, in zero flood slot, 74. He went to, you know, Fifth Avenue. I mean, so you're just like, holy shit, I don't care how many times you say it in my ear, I can't repeat all that back, right?
And then your slot receiver's like, what'd you say?
Yeah, what'd you say? saying? You're like, hold on, wait, I got to find that line again. But where I think it is effective is, you know, when you can look people in the eyes a little bit, right? And look them in the eyes, you know, message them with your eyes. Hey, Berta, you know, I used to, like, as Gruden was saying plays, and there was, like, a special part of the play, I would, like, look at that guy. Hey, and it's Z counter orbit, Z choice. And I'd be, like, looking at the Z, telling him, like, so he fucking knew, like, hey, this is you, dumbass. Let's go. Get ready here, right? And so those are things that, you know, I think go over, let alone sometimes when your face is down. O-linemen, it's hard for them to hear. You know, so they go on reading the lips a little bit. Oh, I saw 64 protection, or oh, he said 75, whatever there. So I think there's some of that. That just it'll free him up a little bit too, instead of just being dug in there. And I'm hopeful. I'm excited about this Ravens team.
Yeah, what do you think is going to be different? The most, you know, Greg Romans was there, and
I just think you're going to have more variety in the pass game. You're going to see more ideas. You know, not that Greg Romans was bad, but as we always talked about, it was based in the running game, and if the running game didn't work, the passing game was not good enough to stand alone. I don't think we're going to have that problem here this time around. One, hey, there's more talent at receiver, and then two, I think the pressure of the contract and all that, Lamar, I think, will be emboldened. I expect them to have a big year in the pass game, and when you talk about, you know, first off, if Bateman can get healthy, and you go Bateman, Odell, and Zay Jones continues to...
Zay Flowers.
Yeah. Zay Flowers continues to wow people with his movement and explosion.
He was your favorite receiver
and,
in the draft.
And those tight ends they got and everything there, that I am expecting this offense to be pretty fucking dangerous.
Dang, maybe they will be my team to win that division.
That division's real.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
49ers question from Devin in Vancouver.
Hello, Devin.
Why is Purdy's small sample size being treated as the baseline for his career and Darnold's larger sample size of poor play being treated as having greater upside than Lance? Why did Shanahan sign off on drafting Lance in the first place? So a lot of quarterback questions there for the 49ers that we have asked for a while and we'll be asking deep into the future on some of these things. So
right.
How would you attack that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, there's questions we still want to see about Purdy, right? You know, and it's not a baseline, but I don't, you know, Purdy, he's not going to be a guy that's going to wow us with his physical ability. I don't think there's any point in our career or life where we're going to go, oh my gosh, lasers all over the field. We're just going to, oh wait, he consistently hits the open guy, makes the right decision. He's sneaky, you know, as far as mobility, getting out of the pocket, moving in the pocket, right? So I think we just got to see more of it and see him do it a little bit more at a consistent level. There's no doubt that Sam Darnold has more physical ability than Brock Purdy. This isn't like people like missed and were like, oh, wait, I saw wrong. Brock Purdy does throw the ball stronger than Sam Darnold. Oh, I saw wrong. He is faster than Sam Darnold. No, none of those are true, right? They're not true. Sam Darnold, I think where people are still, you know, on that is they see the talent he has. And there's a reason he was drafted there. And then, of course, like we've talked about a million times, he was part of two horrible situations.
Yep.
Where Brock Purdy got to come in and take over for a situation that all quarterbacks would want to take over. I mean, that's who you'd sign up for. Oh, my gosh, I get to be a part of this team with this defense and this running game and these receivers and that tight end. Holy shit, right? So, you know, I think that's why Sam Darnold's getting a little bit of the benefit of the doubt as far as that part of the conversation.
Well, I think there are a lot of people in San Francisco who are upset that Trey Lance, they feel like he, They want it to work with Trey.
Yeah,
and they feel
it.
Like he has not gotten the opportunities. He was hurt last year, and now early on in training camp with very few opportunities, they're already being written off. And so, I mean, what do you think Trey Lance sits with them?
He's the third stringer, and I would be shocked if it's anything other than that. He's had, you know, rookie offseason, rookie training camp, preseason, a little playing time rookie year to show, you know, to impress. And he, I think, opened some eyes there. But then it was time for year two, offseason, training camp, preseason, take the next step, show us where that potential is. What can we, you know, hitch our wagon to here in your skill set? And I think that's where it fell off. I think that's where it was like, wait, oh, no, shit. Oh, it's a lot of the same problems we saw in year one and saw in college. They're still here. Oh, no. You know, the throwing is inconsistent, inconsistent, right?
To the point where they had to, you know, have articles and said how they transformed it, a major transformation in his throwing motion.
Right. I mean, you know, they tried to talk it into existence last year.
Yeah.
To the 49er fans who want to say he didn't get the respect, they tried to lay it out there last year for him to take it over, right? I mean, if he took it over and kicked ass all training camp, they would not have re-signed Jimmy Garoppolo. But they did it because of why? Because we were sitting here in the preseason going, ooh, man, that didn't look very good. Oh, man, I don't know.
With a Super Bowl roster.
With a Super Bowl roster, and they had to rethink that. So, you know, I don't know why Shanahan signed off on drafting Trey Lance.
I always thought they were going to take Mac Jones there.
Yeah, well, so did I. There's another guy I talked to who used to think that too. But I don't know. I mean, you know my stance there. If they had Mac Jones, they'd be in a better spot for sure. But Trey Lance, his skill set, maybe the running quarterback thing, those things, I think maybe intrigue Shanahan. And, you know, I think he thought he could make it work. And obviously it's not working right now.
We'll see what Purdy can do when he's back healthy as a second-year quarterback. The Steelers have a second-year quarterback in Kenny Pickett. Harry says to us, Steelers fan here, A, have the Steelers made enough additions on the O-line and with Darnell Washington to have success with the power run game? And B, where does Matt Canada rank among the worst coordinators in the league? So bottom of the league there. But let's start with A there. Offensive line, Darnell Washington. How about that run game?
Yeah, they're going in the right direction on the O-line. You know, first off, you love their first round pick, right? So that's the first start there. They signed some players in free agency, right? I mean, it's still not where I'm sitting here going, "Oh, wow, they turned it around and they're just going to be dominant ass kickers here," right? But I don't think it's going to be the glaring weak spot it might have been the last 2 or 3 years, right? You know, between the first round pick,
Broderick Jones,
right? Siumulo, they got
out of
the Eagles in free agency, right? Those are two pretty damn big moves. I feel like I'm missing somebody else here too. Oh, somebody else in free agency, I thought.
Mason Cole.
Yeah, they got Nate Herbig too on the line. Yeah. LaRaven Clark for a little depth there, you know, and they had some guys there already to where. Yeah, I think it's going to be solid. I think it's going to be good enough to where there will be a run game to rely on. And that Kenny Pickett won't just absolutely get fucking eviscerated like he did in some games, dropping back to pass there. So that's where I'm excited. But, they got some players at least and some pieces to play with and mix and match and try to find the best five, that's for sure.
And you've never been the biggest fan of Matt Canada's offense, but we will see. Maybe now that they have a little more talent around it in the run game. They've always wanted to run. That's why they drafted Najee Harris,
yes,
right?
Yes, right. They want to run, you know, hopefully they can open enough holes here to where they can run the football and, you know, use some of those talented guys on the outside and get some more favorable matchups that way. You know, and yeah, it's hard with Matt Canada too because of that, what we said. You know, one, it was Big Ben at first, and is it him or is it them? And then, yeah, it's the offensive line, lack of protection, lack of run game. So maybe we get a chance to see really what his offense can deliver this year with a little bit of a better pass pro.
All right, finally we get to talk about your Giants. It's about time, right? Corey Joskowitz.
Yeah.
Hey, Corey. A lot of people are down on the Giants. If Neal takes the next step and Schmitz comes in and plays well, this O-line could be the best since the 11 Super Bowl team. Same for the D. If Thibodeau and Aziz take a step, is the biggest question the wide receivers. Feels like I'm higher than most on them, too. So Yeah, what about all that Corey brings up with the Giants?
Yeah, I mean, the Giants could be better and actually not make the playoffs, right? They could be one of those teams. And last year, I am one to sit here and tell you that I think it was a little bit like things fell in place for them, right? And they managed games and situations to, like, just the utmost perfection in a lot of ways where you were
razor thin margin.
You were like, man, it's one mistake and they're not going to win this game. And in fact, not only can they not make a mistake, they need the other team to probably make a mistake and they have to take advantage of that. And then maybe we can win the game. Right. And I they're not going to sneak up on people that way. You know, their schedule is going to be tougher this year. That's for sure. So that's where I look at it to go. Yeah. I don't expect the same results as last year. I don't. I think you could see, in a lot of ways, a more explosive offense, for sure, right? But I don't know if that's necessarily going to necessarily mean more wins and losses on or wins on the field. You know, the receiver thing, I'm with Corey Joshua is a little bit, there's potential there, right? Darius Slayton has some rockets up his ass. Jalin Hyatt has some rockets up his ass, right? So there's some ability there for guys to make plays. Paris Campbell, potential, yeah. You know? We know him, how much I like him. You know, but, hey, Jalin Hyatt's a rookie. How much are we going to be able to expect of him? You know, Darius Slayton, you know, is it going to be more than just big throws down the field? Paris Campbell, can he stay healthy? Jamison Crowder, is he getting too old? Can he still work the slot the right way, right? So I think that's why there's a little bit questions there. But they do have Darren Waller. Their offense should be more dangerous this year.
Yeah.
I worry about kind of what he said. Pass rush, and I know we drafted a first-round corner, but, you know, Wink and that defense, they like to play man-to-man. Is that enough? Do they have enough corners on that back end there to play the style of football they want to play?
This is a good question from Halil's FB Talk. It says, which team or teams do you think have the biggest range of outcomes for 2023? So the highest volatility. If it was a stock, it could go shoot to the moon or it could go plummet to zero. Then you don't get your money back. If the stock goes to zero, you're done.
Detroit would be a team like that. Sorry.
Oh, no.
Boom. You guys could be in the NFC Championship game. You guys could be 6-11.
Oh, no.
Just knowing
I
you're
can't
Detroit.
I disagree with you.
I think, you know, the Jets, I would say, are a team that is at least on their radar for that boom or
really?
Bust.
I think the defense is, like, any team that has a defense that I respect, I feel like it's hard for them to bust totally.
I mean, I hear you. Defense is going to keep you in a lot of football games. I guess where I look at it is just go, like, they got a tough early schedule.
Yeah.
It's all these distractions and hoopla. And if they started, like, 1-3, could I see, like, the wheels fall off a little bit, and then we're sitting here going, damn, the Jets are 3-7, or, you know, and they just too much hoopla and talk and dysfunction to overcome? I'm going to throw them in there. I'm not saying they're my first choice. I'm just saying that's a team I certainly could see that.
Pete throws the Browns in there.
I think the Browns are a good one, too. Agreed. The Browns, you know.
Could win the division or finish last.
Exactly right. Exactly right. I could see it going like, oh, man, it didn't work, and oh, man. You know, the offense isn't good enough, and Watson wasn't as good as we thought. Or I could see, oh, my gosh, whoa, holy cow. Watson's been phenomenal. They found something in the right formula on the offense, and Jim Schwartz is helping out the defense. And holy crap, they're in the divisional playoff game, giving the number one seed a tough time. I could see that for sure. They would be one there for me. I feel like the Saints are probably another team I look at that way.
Okay, yeah.
You know?
I agree.
I could see the Saints winning the NFC South, you know, not by a wide margin.
Yeah.
But I could also see it being like, oh, man, you know, the other way. We go, oh, the defense just wasn't what we thought. Man, Derek Carr didn't make it work. That'd be another one that jumps out to me.
Chargers for me.
Right? I know.
Like, that's a team where it's like they finally
took
off.
Could be in the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Right. Or you're like, I don't know, is this – fourth down injuries and everything else that can possibly go wrong with the Chargers happening.
Yeah, and that's a team too. And Pete says in my ear, it's like if they do not get off to a good start, or if it's like 2-5,
everyone's
going to
jump on.
Everyone's
that
gone. Or
no
it's
doubt
just
about
like
it.
They've got to make changes. Yep. So I think the Packers too could be one. Packers,
I hear you.
You said like Jordan Love, like they like him. You said that with Connor last time, and
Well, it's the same thing with the Jets. Like, if it went off too bad early, you're right. Can they overcome it? Can they fight back? But if they gain some early confidence, they might be able to ride that wave, and all of a sudden we're sitting there going, man, the Packers are in the playoffs, and they're going to beat the Lions for the NFC North title.
Injuries, of course. You know, Dolphins with Tua, I think a lot hinges on his ability. Which, by the way, I met his brother, Talia. Tungvalu. He's the starting quarterback in Maryland.
That's right.
He was cool. Soft-spoken, but he was awesome. Yeah. And He plays the ukulele, and so we had him play that for us. It was a great song. He played center for Tua when he was, like, in the fourth grade.
Is that right?
He was the center. Tua was, like, the quarterback.
So how tall is this brother? 5'11". He was 5'11", okay.
5'11".
Yep, pretty good build, thick. Like, what's he?
He's not that big. He's not that big, but okay.
Yeah.
Solid.
All right. So we'll see what he's got this year for the Terps.
Yeah, I'm rooting for him, though.
Yeah, cool.
Great ukulele player. He can fall back on that if his football thing doesn't work out. One more for you. This is from Sloppy Joe Namath. Says, hey Chris, my albino brother from another mother. Okay, cool. That's you.
So I guess he's really white like me is what he's saying.
No. Is that what that means? Or you're the albino and Sloppy Joe Namath is not the albino.
He's saying my albino brother from another mother. So you're saying, maybe he's not albino. Maybe he's just saying I am.
So Sloppy Joe Namath, tweet us. Are you albino or not? What's the color of your skin?
Yes, please.
What is your best story from training camp?
Oh boy. Man. Gosh.
You've told a few in the past.
I know I have. I mean, you know, the one that always just comes to my mind is just how nervous I was for my first real practice with the Buccaneers, right? I'd never had been that nervous on a football field in my life. The intensity was way more intense than I thought. They had just won the Super Bowl. There's a bunch of fucking psychos on defense, right? I'm going to hang out with one in the Hall of Fame this weekend and Rondé Barber and his induction ceremony. But yeah, the way they were talking, the defense, and you know, it's stretch. And this is when you know your team's good, when you're stretch and like, you know, half the team, they don't even stretch. They just sit there and talk and they're in lines with Sapp saying something, Simeon Rice is saying something. And I'm like, oh my God. And I'm like, I mean, I was hyperventilating. I was literally like, I'm just touching my toes here. And I'm like, it's we're at the Wild World of Sports at Disney. It's Gruden, you know, hey, I got this play. So, I mean, it just, that always jumps out to me. All right, so that's one. Also, in that same training camp, I mean, Brad Johnson having a full body cramp and being stuck on his hotel room floor and just yelling help until someone busted in his room to help him, that happened that training camp. My third year.
They had to bust into his hotel room?
They had to bust in his room. He was having a full body cramp, right, and could not reach the phone or anything. You know, it's like the second day of training camp.
So people just hear in the hallway, they just hear Brad Johnson yelling.
We're like, wait, we think that's Bull's room. And we call him Bull.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, they had to bust the door down to go, you know, help him out there.
Bust the door down.
Yeah. Busted it down. Or busted the lock, you know.
Could have just gotten one of those keys or something.
Yeah, I think it was like a little bit more of a panic there for a while.
You thought maybe there was someone in there.
Something was really an issue, right? Yeah. So I think we started to panic. Like a Dean Lyman came out and gave it the old kick. I mean, our Joseph, oh my gosh, our guard from Oklahoma we drafted in the first round. Oh my gosh, I'm blanking. Davin Joseph, I was going to say Dalvin, Davin Joseph, him having to pay a $24,000 bill for the old lineman quarterback dinner will never get old and always make me laugh.
See that. You know,
me sleeping in the equipment room in Denver and them telling them to close the sliding walls so I could be in the dark and just be in there for a little while. I mean, these are some of the stories that are coming to my head.
Why did you want to do that?
You had an hour off maybe.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm going to go get a nap somewhere. So I'd go back in the equipment room.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they had those things where you could turn and you could make, like, the aisles bigger, right? Here's the shoulder pad. And they had a few that were empty. So I'd take my little sleeping bag and my pillow in there, get in the bottom one, and tell one of the equipment guys to close me up so I could get some peace and quiet for a little bit, for a little while. I'd take a nap there for about 40, 45
minutes. Were you the only person doing that?
No, there was a few other guys. Wow. There was another guy or two. I got the idea from someone who I can't remember who I got it from.
Did they also have sleeping bags? Was that normal to bring a sleeping bag?
Yeah, you had something. You got to have something just to lie on a little bit there.
This is like summer camp for kids. Bring your sleeping bag, pillow.
It's summer camp for kids, except you get motherfucked and knocked on the head every now and then called football.
I feel bad for Davin Joseph. 24,000. That's hazing. That's hazing.
It is.
That's not
Louis
cool.
Louis XIII. John Wade bought it right as we were going. Like they were like about to give us the bill, and he's like, "Give me that bottle of Louis XIII." So the bottle was gonna, it was gonna be like a $15,000. There was like a $10,000 bottle of liquor he bought.
Yeah,
and yeah, that was a tough.
And he really had to pay for it.
He had. He. I think there was another lineman he split it with. But yeah, he had to pay for it.
Well, he had a.
I got other ones. I gotta think about them. You know, it is on the spot a little bit, but yeah, those are the best ones.
All right. All right, that was it. We're back. Hey,
We're back, baby. He didn't wear his red pants. He wore his blue ones, but it's all good. We'll accept him into the club anyways.
Because I took the red pants to Indianapolis.
Oh,
I had to for Big Ten.
We saw the red pants. Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah, Morgan was so happy. She was out there with us.
Yeah, maybe I saw her on Instagram or she took a picture. That's where I saw it. Something.
I had to.
All right, good.
I had to let the Big Ten know who they're dealing with.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Red panted man.
Red panted man from Detroit. That's who he is.
Exactly.
All right, everybody. You know where to find us. We'll be back. Not going to be back here Wednesday with Ahmed. I'm going to the Hall of Fame tomorrow.
Nice.
Hall of Fame game Thursday night. NBC. Check it out. Browns, Jets, right? That should be cool. I'm going to also spend the weekend there because of Rondé Barber's enshrinement. Going to be a part of those festivities.
Cool.
But on Thursday, going to do the pod with Devin McCourty, our newest member of NBC Sports. He'll be on Sunday Night Football with us this year, Football Night in America.
You know him that well?
You know, I know him, known him for a long time. He played against my brother in high school. He went to one of my brother's rival high schools, right? So, known of him for a long time. I made his tapes when I was working in New England. I had to make the tapes of the draft-eligible guys in the Northeast colleges. So I made all the Devin McCourty Rutgers tapes that put into the scouting, you know, system and all of that. So
he
that's
owes
why
you everything.
That's why they drafted him in the first round. They were like, damn, this tape's good. Who is this guy? And I was like, cut off all the bad ones for that guy. Just, you know,
seems
so he
cool.
Good. Yeah, so he looks good. We'll have some fun with him. I'm certainly interested in picking his brain. But check it out. Check us out. You know where to find us. And again, Sunday Night Football on Thursday at the Hall of Fame game. We'll be there. Ahmed, thanks for driving the ship as always. You the man. I missed you very much.
Missed you too.
And I'll see you next Monday. Try not to cry. You can wait. We'll see each other a week from today. Clap it up.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.